This is Sea Change Radio, covering the shift to sustainability. I'm Alex Wise.
I'm a firm believer that beer is good. And if I'm going to make beer, I'm representing everybody in the industry, so I should make the best beer I can. But here in Alaska, I think you're reminded of the fact that our community, while it's wonderful and beautiful, it has ignored the most important part of our life, and that's the planet we're on.
Do you think beer is good? If you do, you're not alone. Beer is the most widely consumed alcoholic beverage worldwide, and one of the earliest fermented products humans ever crafted. There's a new trend brewing in the ancient art of beer making, sustainability. My guest today on Sea Change Radio is Jeff Larson, co-founder of Alaskan Brewing Company, a craft brewer that's just as committed to environmental stewardship as it is to making a tasty libation. Jeff and his team are at the cutting edge of what they call beer-powered beer, using innovation to make beer without a drop of energy wasted. He'll tell us about the technology they've developed to reduce and reuse in their brewing process, how they keep up with consumer demands for flavorful and ecologically conscious beer, and how they try to meet the challenges of keeping their carbon footprint low in the distant climes of the U.S.'s northernmost state. I'm joined now on Sea Change Radio by the co-founder of Alaskan Brewing Company, Jeff Larson. Jeff, welcome to Sea Change Radio.
Alex, thanks for having me on the air.
Although Alaskan Brewing Company beer is not available in every U.S. state, the brand has grown quite a bit and has been around for several decades. Can you give us a brief overview of the company, Jeff?
Sure. Alex, we started in 1986, and back then there were around 67 breweries in the United States. Now there's 2,700 and growing. And that was 27 years ago. We had kind of this novel idea back then of starting a small brewery focused on flavor here in Alaska, where it was kind of maybe some of the back eddies of the beer world. We didn't get necessarily the freshest products sent to Alaska. But actually, I think when you think about the lifestyle and nature of people, we definitely enjoy where we are, what we do. And so when we started, it really hit, a chord with the locals.
One of the main challenges I can imagine as your beer has become more widely distributed is keeping transportation costs down from Juneau, Alaska. Can you give us an idea of the arc of your efforts to become a more sustainable brewer, Jeff?
I love the term that you just used, arc, the arc of that, because our shipping is via water. Juneau is a landlocked community. You can only get here by air or by sea. And the problem with ocean travel is time. It takes time. But the advantage of ocean travel is it's the most efficient way of transporting goods over miles of distance.
And especially heavy goods, I would imagine.
Heavy goods. And actually, of course, most of what we produce is liquid, which is from the water of Southeast Alaska, which is the largest temperate rainforest in North America. So water we've got plenty of. But the other raw materials we have shipped in, and they come in on barge. And I'd have to say that, that's one thing about our location is you're mindful of everything you see around you. I mean, that's one reason why I'd say most of us live in Alaska. We choose to live here. We're given every opportunity to leave. we tend to go through Seattle, Washington to go visit friends and family. But Alaska has such a broad appeal to so many people. It truly is a frontier mindset. And I think in that sense, the need for innovation is prevalent in everything we do. And that innovation comes in many forms. I mean, truly, we leave friends and family behind, and so we're innovative in trying to meet new friends and family. We make our own. I think also that kind of transfers over into our approach to brewing. We have a lot of challenges in Alaska, you know, and I'd say every brewery has their challenges. But for us, it, you know, the concept of being conservation-minded is inherent in the difficulty with which we have to approach making things. You know, very few wasted materials makes for a lot, you know, more efficient and less cumbersome process. So from the beginning, I think our location has kind of instilled a need to be very focused on kind of the question, why not?
You mentioned how in 1986 there were around 60 breweries in the U.S. and now there are over 2,000. What do you attribute this explosion to, Jeff?
It's clear to me that the public now is much more interested in what they're consuming. And I think one of the odd advantages that we had when we started was that beer had been relegated to a product of very low flavor, very low impact. In fact, you know, some of those advertising campaigns we're talking about, you know, no taste, no aftertaste. Why bother? But I think what was really, I think the evolution was started with maybe a kind of a revolution of thought. A few people started saying, hey, let's produce something with a huge amount of flavor and make it unique. Make it maybe a statement of where you're from. So we did that with our beers. And initially, I have to say that people would actually ask, what beers do you make, and which what ones are the lightest flavored beers? I don't get that anymore. I think people are really looking for that explosion in flavor, that experience that comes from consuming a wonderful craft beer that when we first started was really kind of unusual. Not only did we only have imports to maybe look at as far as beers that had more color and more of those, you know, roasted characteristics. But the only disadvantage with those is they're often fairly old and maybe not at their prime in condition. So really it was the void of these products that really allowed us to grow. And I think today what you've got is a consumer that's not only interested in flavor, they're also interested in knowing a little bit about the product. You know, what makes this beer so floral in aroma? What makes this beer so kind of toasted in character and flavor? I think that's a story that people really didn't get before, and now we're all talking about beer and its flavors.
And back in 1986, people didn't necessarily think that beer could be paired with food. That was strictly the purview of wine back then, right?
Absolutely. I think beer had been relegated to either a commodity or, you know, there's, you know, certain occasions, maybe potato chips would be a great time to have a beer. And obviously that's not the case. Beer throughout history, if you go back just a mere century, beer had a very important place in on the table. Back, you know, hundreds of years ago, beer was consumed as kind of a matter of course in the northern climates. You didn't drink the water from the stream, that was considered to be unhealthy. It's only been a recent marketing trend where beer was marketed into its old corner of just being a commodity. That's not the case now, and that's why you see such an explosion. There's a lot of great products coming out, and I'd have to say that challenges all of us all the time.
Went bowling the other night, started drinking and got real tight. I blew each and all my friends, felt so good I had to blow again. I said, hey bartender, hey man, look here. Draw one, draw two, draw three, four glasses of beer. Saw a chick sitting on the end, I said, baby, can't we be friends? You look as sweet as you can be, come on down and drink with me. I said, hey bartender, hey man, look here. one draw, two draw, three, four glasses of beer.
To listen to Sea Change Radio anytime, anyplace, just subscribe to our free podcast. Simply follow the link from seachangeradio.com or search for us in the iTunes podcast directory.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm speaking with the co-founder of Alaskan Brewing Company, Jeff Larson. So Jeff, let's talk about some of your environmental stewardship efforts, most notably your biomass-powered steam boiling system, which makes, as you call it, beer-powered beer. Tell us a little bit more about how this works.
Well, it's an interesting process, beer making. And as with any manufacturing of a product, there's going to be certain waste streams. And one of the largest waste streams that we create is called spent grain. It's the residue after we've taken all the great stuff that becomes beer, you know, the malt. Barley malt is mashed, and in that mashing process, we extract a lot of soluble flavor compounds, including sugars and complex carbohydrates that the yeast will consume ultimately to make beer. But not all of the grain gets dissolved into what becomes beer. Those residues are spent grain. It's the husk and other parts of the grain that didn't get solubilized.
And recycling the stuff has kind of been the holy grail for brewers for many years, I can imagine.
No question. You know, you have to be very mindful of your whole process, including your waste streams. The nice thing about spent grain, though, is it does have some food value. And so many of the common ways of disposing of the spent grain is by using it as feed for cattle and other types of livestock. But what we don't have here in Juneau is a lot of agriculture. And so we have been looking at using spent grain in other ways. We do dry it and send it south for the dairy farms in Washington. But what we ended up finding out is that its BTU value, its fuel value, is very high. In fact, if you talk about it, technically speaking, on a BTU basis, its highest value is as a fuel. The difficulty is that it's very high in protein. And so I always kind of use this as a kind of a pictorial analogy. It's kind of like being by a campfire and then deciding to see if you can fuel it with eggs and start throwing raw eggs into the fire. They don't burn very nice. Well, that's kind of what spent grain does. And so over the last two decades of experimenting with the spent grain, we've learned a lot about how best to use it as fuel. And so we started investigating using it as 100% fuel for a steam boiler, which has never been done before. And many people have tried, actually. People have tried, but have been unsuccessful. The main problem, of course, is it kind of tends to belch out black smoke, and it's can be pretty ugly. And so we started working with our existing knowledge base, because like I said, we use it as a portion of our fuel for drying grain. And then we were able to install this unit. We made a 1/10 scale model before we actually pulled the trigger and put in a 9 million BTU boiler that has as its fuel 100% spent grain. And so it's a biomass boiler. And I think one thing that you know, every renewable resource has its impacts. You know, there's no silver bullet. But I think the unique thing about this for us is that here we have a waste stream that we've converted, and its value is three times that of what we would have gotten as it being sold for feed. Its value is to replace our use of fossil fuels.
And I imagine selling that feed could be even more expensive for a business situated where yours is up in Alaska. You might have to ship that by barge, right?
Sure. Yeah, you bet. We dry it to stabilize it and then ship it. One thing nice about our location in Juneau is there's a lot of empty vans that leave Juneau. We have, people that live here, so there's a lot of shipment of materials into Juneau, but there isn't a lot that ships out. So our return leg to the lower 48, as we call it, is actually quite efficient, because the vans are going south anyway, typically empty, but we're able to ship southbound both the spent grain when we were using it as animal feed, but also our finished product, our beer.
So do you think we'll see more of these types of biomass-powered steam boilers that run on spent grain being deployed by other breweries? I mean, even if they're not environmentally conscious businesses, it just makes good economic sense, one would think.
I think that's a good question. What Alaska's done for us is really challenged our notions of what is typically done. I think we're all creatures of habit. You know, habits are good, but habits also don't necessarily kindle your creative side. Alaska has challenged me personally. It's challenged me on the business side also. What is typically done is not start a brewery in Alaska. So when we do much of what we, you know, have to make beer, we're always kind of challenging ourselves to say, well, how should we do it? We're in a unique place. So the concept of using spent grain as fuel, you know, there's an impediment. Yeah, there's a financial hurdle. There's a technical hurdle. I mean, we're on the cutting edge of technology. Well, I sometimes say that's the bleeding edge of technology, because you're having to do something new. The reason it's new, it's not been done before, is because it's not easy. If it was easy, everybody would do it. But here in Alaska, I think what also is interesting is we're challenged to try new ways, because it hasn't been done up here before. I mean, in many ways, our spent grain use as a fuel was fostered because of the need to try to be innovative, to deal with our spent grain in a way that was financially reasonable. So for us, we're looking at 70% of our fossil fuel use is going to be replaced with the spent grain. Looking at our CO2, carbon dioxide is an important part of beer production. It's what gives the effervescence to beer, but it's also something that protects beer. So when we're filling bottles and kegs, we're evacuating all air contact with a CO2 stream. Well, fermentation generates CO2, so we capture it. We're the smallest brewery, the only craft brewery collecting CO2 when we first installed it in 1998, which was a CO2 capturing and purifying system that then allowed us to use the CO2 that we made, and we're self-sufficient on CO2 use.
Just before our love got lost, you said, I am as constant as a northern star. And I said, constantly in the darkness, where's that at? If you want me, I'll be in the bar, on the back of a cartoon coaster, in the blue TV screen light. I drew a map of Canada, oh Canada, with your face sketched on it twice. Oh, you're in my blood like holy wine. It tastes so bitter and so sweet. Oh, I could drink a case of you. And I would still be on my feet. Oh, I would still be on my feet.
Follow the shift to sustainability with Sea Change Radio on Twitter at twitter.com/SeaChangeRadio and on our Facebook page.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm speaking to the co-founder of Alaskan Brewing Company, Jeff Larson. So we've spoken about your steam boiling system running on spent grain, Jeff, but you've also created a pretty innovative internal loop system for drying your grain. Can you describe how this works?
Yeah, the boiler actually is one part of the spent grain steam boiler is only one part of the actual process. Really, you know, when you think about a brewery, you're actually thinking about there are so many elements to make beer. And each one of them, if you don't have it in place, you know, you won't have the beer at the end. But in making the energy, the steam energy that we use to brew the beer, the process is not just the boiler. We have the spent grain that comes out of our brewing process. That spent grain, we then dry. And then the dry spent grain is the fuel for the boiler. And then the boiler makes steam, part of which is used in brewing beer, but part of which is also used to dry the spent grain. So there is a little bit of a loop. The energy that the spent grain generates is used to dry the spent grain. But to make it even more complicated, in 2007, we installed a mash filter press. And the mash filter press is part of the brewing process where we're taking those grains and steeping them in water, and we get all this beautiful liquid that will become beer, but we have to remove the liquid from the grain. So the mash filter press presses out all that great liquid that will become beer, leaving behind this cake of spent grain. Well, in that processing, we're drying the grain by a mechanical process of squeezing. It's very analogous to, I would say, making coffee. The traditional way, the old way of making beer is with a lauter tun, which is like a false bottom colander holding the grain up, and the liquid is just kind of allowed to, you know, drip out. It's kind of like a drip coffee maker. You have kind of the really wet, spent grounds from the coffee. Well, the mash filter press is like an espresso machine. It is extracting all the flavor at just the right way, very, very, very delicately. At the same time, it leaves this really dry material at the end. So the mash filter press creates a drier grain, which means we have less to dry. We have less energy that it takes to make it into the dry spent grain that then fires the boiler.
So where does your brewery source its energy, Jeff? I imagine that solar might not be an ideal alternative up in Alaska.
Our energy source is from high alpine lakes that have been tapped literally back at the turn of the century. The first hydro project that was put in place was in the late 1890s. And what they did is they tapped, they call them lake taps. They drilled a tunnel underneath a lake and then tapped the bottom of these barren, no fish in them, lakes up in the close to the ice fields here in Juneau. The Snetisham Annex Lake and Lake Dorothy were tapped, and they produce 95% of our power here in Juneau. I know Lake Snetisham and Annex Lake were barren. There were no fish in them at all when they were tapped. And since then, they've been stocked with non-native brook trout. But these hydro projects account for, actually, there's two other smaller ones that end up creating 100% renewable energy here in Juneau. So the energy from these hydro projects generate the electrical component of what we need to run our pumps and refrigeration plants. And then the spent grain biomass boiler generates the heat energy that we use to brew beer.
So it seems fair to say that if it weren't for the need to transport your product such long distances, your company's carbon footprint would be almost negligible.
Yeah, I did a real quick analysis. If you just put a black box around the brewery, we absorb more CO2 from the atmosphere than we generate. Assuming beer is good. If beer is good, if that's a positive thing that we're doing for this planet, making beer is good. We are absorbing more CO2 than we generate. Again, I'd have to emphasize, that's just, I mean, that was a real quick calculation having to do with just black boxing our our operations. There's a lot more complex analysis that has to be done in regards to the cost of packaging, the cost of CO2 cost of transportation and the like.
Also, it's worth pointing out that Alaskan Brewing is far from alone in its environmental stewardship efforts, among craft brewers at least. I can think of New Belgium, Anderson Valley, and Sierra Nevada off the top of my head as some that are making strides in terms of waste stream management and energy efficiency.
You know, I think that's what's amazing about the consuming public now is you have the ability to find out more about where the source of your enjoyment comes from. I think the ability to find the information about what's being made by different companies, everyone's trying to jump on the bandwagon, and maybe that's, you know, greenwashing. But, you know, at the end of the day, even if it's greenwashing, as long as they're doing it, that's a good thing.
And customers seem to really care about it, too.
And they're caring about it. And I have to say, that is the driver. I think that's one thing that really epitomizes the craft industry. We are driven by our consumers. We're being innovative and responsive. I think that's one thing that's remarkable today. Our consumer is demanding our stewardship to be exemplary. And all in all, I think the craft beer industry, because they're responsive to the consumer, because they're listening, truly one-on-one, one beer drinker conversation can influence a craft brewer more so than all the statistics and the like that might drive the larger business's ethic. I think we're connected to our product. We're connected to our consuming public in a much more intimate and community-minded way. I think Alaska has been inspirational in that for Marcy and I. Marcy's my co-founder. And what we've found really is the need to be attentive, mindful, and caring. We live in an absolutely gorgeous place. But I'd have to say, when I walk the beaches of the Outer Coast, as we call it, and we're talking about beaches that are covered with bear prints, there's not a soul on that beach except for myself and all the bear prints that make it look like it's one of these highly populated areas. Well, it is, by wild animals. But the disappointing thing is you look at the tide line and you see the world's trash floating up on these pristine beaches. And you really are reminded of how big an impact man makes. Those types of experiences are kind of this bittersweet. I'm in the wilderness, but guess what? We aren't alone. And I think that really does kind of set the stage for how we approach making beer here. Like I say, you know, I'm a firm believer that beer is good. And if I'm going to make beer, I'm representing everybody in the industry. So I should make the best beer I can. But here in Alaska, I think you're reminded of the fact that our community, while it's wonderful and beautiful, it has ignored the most important part of our life, and that's the planet we're on. So when we brew beer, I mean, we look at how to make great products efficiently, trying to make the smallest impact. We purchased a mash filter press in 2007, and that ended up increasing our ability to use all the grain. And the first year of operations with that mash filter press, we used 1 million gallons less water to make the same amount of beer.
He's the co-founder of Alaskan Brewing Company, Jeff Larson. Jeff, thanks so much for being my guest on Sea Change Radio.
Well, Alex, thanks so much for inviting me, and it's been a pleasure.
Sway the future to the past and find what will endure.
You've been listening to Sea Change Radio. Our intro music is by Sanford Lewis, and our outro music is by Alex Wise. Additional music by Maceo Parker, Floyd Dixon, and Joni Mitchell. Check out our website at seachangeradio.com. That's seachangeradio.com to stream or download the show or subscribe to our podcast. Visit our archives there to hear from Bill McKibben, Van Jones, Paul Hawken, and many others. And tune in to Sea Change Radio next week as we continue making connections for sustainability. For Sea Change Radio, I'm Alex Wise.